Blog Talk Radio.
I shouldn't have picked this little tree. Everything I do turns into a disaster. I guess I really don't know what Christmas is all about. Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Sure, Charlie Brown. I can tell you what Christmas is all about. Lights, please. And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them. And they were sore afraid, and the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Thank you.
king, the Italian Christmas donkey. La 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 la. Santa's got a little friend, his name is Dominic, the cutest little donkey, you never see him kick. When Santa visits his paisans with Dominic, he'll be, because the reindeer cannot climb the hills of Italy. Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the donkey, jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la. Jingle bells around his feet and presents on the sled. Hey, look at the Mayor's Derby on top of Dominic's head. A pair of shoes for Louis and a dress for Josephine. The label on the inside says they're made in Brooklyn. Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la. La 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 la. Children sing and clap their hands, and Dominic starts to dance. They talk Italian to a man he even understands. Kumaras and kumbaras do they dance da 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 da. When Dominic over comes to town and brings you to Charil. Hey, jingity-jing, it's Dominic the donkey. Jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas donkey. La, 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 la. Hey, Dominic, what an adala.
With the players.
Come on, live direct from hell. Mono Pack.
But hey, enough of my yakking. What do you say? Let's boogie.
And that's my cue to start the show. Merry Christmas. December the 23rd, 2021. Live from Higher Top Hard Rock and Sports Studios in beautiful scenic Monroe, New Jersey, we are your three-hour, almost three-hour, weekly get-together where we bring you the biggest news from around the world of hard rock, heavy metal, across the wide world of sports. And yes, it is, folks. It is the eve of the eve. Christmas of the eve of eves. It's here already. Seems like yesterday we started the countdown to it, and now it is already here, and I am depressed, sad, and excited for a lot of reasons. But we have a show to do, and we will not disappoint, as we usually don't. I got my giant lid on. We got a little festivities here, and I'm looking forward to a great show tonight. Got lots to talk about. Paul Gill will be joining Jeff and myself in a few minutes. Do a little Buck Showalter and a little bit on the Beatles documentary, Get Back, which I've watched the entirety of. So I'm looking forward to talking to Paul about that. And we'll talk about the lots going on with the Giants. A little going on with the Jets. We got a lot of postponements because of COVID. Lots of COVID stuff. We got a lot of football. We talk a little Micah Parsons, Kirk Cousins, Tom Brady, Brandon Staley. We'll talk. We're going to break down the playoff picture this week. We'll get the I'll get Jeff's thoughts on the contenders and pretenders. We'll do a little bit of that tonight. Talk a little music. And a lot of Christmas stuff tonight. Talk about favorite movies, plans for the weekend, and I really appreciate everybody stopping in. Hey, Jay Giacio, Merry Christmas, my friend. Jay Giacio, the real estate agent to the stars, as they call him. That's right. Well, at least I do. I call Jay the real estate agent to the stars, and the first guy to ever put his name and his company or his business behind our show, and I can't thank him enough. And a big thank you to Jay. And Sam Bone, RFL Records, friends at Hemp Wizard Beard Care Company, Chris LaFrancesca and Metro Records, Talking the Fast Lane, all the people who support our show. We want to say thank you to all of you guys for doing that. And Jay's a good friend and a hell of a guitar player from a great band on Staten Island. And if you ever want to get yourself a band for your corporate events or American Cover Story is your gig. Those, you know, Melissa and the boys, Jay and Jimmy, Tommy, you know, just tremendous people. And you couldn't ask for a better group of people on that one. So make sure you keep an eye out for them for their gigs. Although right now I don't know what we're gonna get. So anyway, listen. Merry Christmas to everybody. We were thrilled to be here tonight, and I'm gonna get Jeff on right now and get the show really kicked off right now with my partner Crime, and a guy that I go back about 40 Christmases with. So here he is. Without further ado, the sexiest man on his side of the screen, Mr. Jeff Tolwinski. Yeah, Jeffy.
What's up, man? Why are we so up? Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I gotta bring us in on that. I can't be that focused on the two of us. It's not good.
Yeah, please.
Please. In the age of HD and LEDs, we need to go back to the days when you used to have to fix the vertical control on the screen.
Black and white portable.
Exactly. With the vertical control button on the back. Slapping the side of the TV to get it to stop rolling.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty good idea.
Hey, Hefe, let's start the show off the right way, my brother. How was your week? How was your first week of vacation?
Better than being at work.
That's very true.
I went to go get my check today.
Wow.
And my boss is a jerk off. Put that out there.
Did he?
I'm my direct boss.
Did he give? Well, you're talking about your boy Don Blasio, that boss,
no.
The big shot boss.
No, not that high up.
That's
how high higher than me.
Okay.
He tells me, he says, I'll see you, next week. I'm going to come in and work like a Sunday here and there while I'm on vacation. So he's like, well, I see that you're working the 26th, and I'm like, nah, it's just that change. He says, I'm not going coming in on the 26th. So he's like, but it's on your schedule. It's on the schedule. Meanwhile, there is no schedule. You have the piece of fucking paper that was copied that when I gave to my boss.
Right.
And I was like, well, I told my boss, that I'm not coming in that day.
Right.
So he got all pissed at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, well, I'm going to come in on the 1st. And he's like, I don't know. That's your day off.
Oh, playing a little dirty pool.
Huh?
Playing a little dirty pool with you.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was like, so you don't want me to come in on the 1st? No. okay, no problem. You got it from here, buddy boy. And because I actually, sent a message to my boss when I found out that he wasn't here this week.
Right.
And I don't know if next week is too good either. So this guy may not be in for quite some time.
Ah.
Feeling good. I'm assuming he's got fucking COVID,
Yeah.
But I don't know. Listen, hopefully he gets better.
Hopefully he gets better, Jeff, and hopefully we get better. And listen, it's the day before the eve. It's our favorite holiday and favorite time of the year, as we always talk about. You and I, we're big fans of this time of the year. I'm going to be the first one. I told you this privately today. I'll say it out loud today. I have not enjoyed the holidays this year. There's been way too much stress and things going on in my life that I have not enjoyed myself the way I have maybe in years past. I'm almost going to be forced to enjoy it this weekend since I am homebound all weekend. I watched a lot of my little movies and all that kind of stuff, but I just have not sat back and relaxed. And I'm going to do that a little bit this weekend and possibly into next week. Right now, I don't know my near future.
That sucks, man. That sucks.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. But listen, I got to see you and your lovely wife the other night, and we exchanged our gifts. And again, thank you. I have the coasters set up across the room for me, and the pants will be worn tomorrow night while I watch my shows. What you got there?
Did you notice I changed my name?
I did. I just see that now. I'm still not calling you that. I'm going with the other one. I said I was going to go with. I thought that was better.
Well, I'm not answering to that.
Were you happy with the music I started the show with?
I heard the one song in its entirety, Dominic the Donkey.
Yes, I played a little bit of the corner.
That was geared towards the half, man.
Well, it was. I thought that was a little fun to play a little something different. I'm gonna. I have another one to play. I did a little digging. I tried to find some odd Christmas music. I want to play you another one. Can I play you another Christmas song that was a little on the odd side? And I'm going to find more. I actually found a few more. I don't want to play them all tonight. I think next week's show I'm going to play you some odd and wacky Christmas music and try to let you guess on who's singing the song.
All right, listen, as far as I'm concerned, you want to make the whole show about Christmas. I'm ready to go.
Well, we're going to get some football in. We are going to talk about a lot of Christmas stuff tonight. I want to talk about memories and favorite shows. I want to talk to you about Lethal Weapon and Die Hards and some movies and just have some fun tonight and all that good stuff. But let me play you a little something right here that I think is probably the oddest song I've ever heard for a Christmas song. And I want you to give me your take on it. Ready?
Go ahead, man.
Let me see if I get you to hear it. Can you hear it?
Yeah, a little bit.
'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snuggled in beds. While vision...
Are you making out the words? You hear this? Okay,
yeah.
Okay, hold on.
Christmas Carol.
It's 'twas the night before Christmas.
Yeah.
And the sugar plums danced in the head. Then Mama in the kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash.
I don't know if you could see it. Can you see the screen, like what I'm playing? Okay, good. Okay, good. So I'll give you a chance right now. Do you have any idea who this is?
Right now, no.
All right, I'll give you a few more seconds of it. It's almost what I think the first Christmas, almost the first rap song I've ever heard. Well, let me play a little bit more. Pay attention to the voice. I will tell you, I'll give you a small hint. It's a from the 50s television star. Hang on, okay.
Well, what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer with a little old driver so lively and quick. I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick, more rapid than eagles, his horses they came, and he whistled and he shouted and he called him by name. Now dash, and now dance, and now prance, around Victor, ah, governor, you, but I'm done, and listen, the top of the fort to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. So up to the housetop, the horses they flew with the sleigh.
Any clues so far?
I'm going to take, just for the fuck of it, I'm going to take a guess.
God.
Okay. Is it Lorne Greene?
It's not Lorne Greene. I'll give you one more hint, then I'll give you a few more seconds.
Was I even close?
I'd say no. The answer to that would be no. He was the second banana, a very famous second banana who worked for the city of New York. Okay.
Art Carney.
That's exactly who it is. It's Art Carney. Art Carney doing 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. It was a jazzy... version of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and when I heard it first, it was on the radio, and I went, "Who the fuck is that?"
Any idea when that was recorded?
1954.
Okay, it does not surprise me.
He was 36 years old when he recorded this.
It has that swing type of feel to it.
Yes, yes.
And everything. So that's why I asked when it was recorded. I figured it might have been closer to the 40s.
No, just, I have it up on the thing. It says Art Carney, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, 1954.
Well,
but yes, you're right. It is.
I'm trying to take a guess. I would have said early 50s, late 40s.
Yeah, you're in the ballpark. So, yeah, it was one of the more odd ones. I might have a couple more for you a little later on. I thought we'd have some fun with.
Definitely play some more, man. I actually want to look that up and see if that is on.
Go ahead.
Art Carney, The Night Before Christmas. Yep, you can get it.
Yep.
Wow. Let me see. That is, wow. Wow. No? Oh, wow. That's unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon.
You want another one right now? Give you another one?
Sure, why not?
Okay, let me give you another one. Let's see if you can get this one, Jeff. I guess hold on. The commercial's playing first. Give it 1 second. And Hard Rock and Sports, Jeff and Tom, having a little Christmas fun.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donder and Blitzen.
Donder.
But do you?
Do you ever say Donder?
Donder? I thought it was Donder.
It is Donder. It's not Donder. Where got that from? Any guess so far?
Because of that, I'm going to say Will Ferrell.
Nope. No, it's not Will Ferrell. I'll give you some more. And it's
close.
Technically, yes, but no.
Okay.
Hold on.
The most famous reindeer of all. Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer. Oh, yeah, the very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, it's blue.
Any clue?
William Shatner.
That's it, Jeff. Right on the money. That was William Shatner with his rendition of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Why the fuck is he saying Donder?
I think he was trying to over-enunciate a little bit there. I don't really know, Jeff. I'm just playing what they put in front of me. So
I hear you. As soon as I heard some of the singing,
yes.
I was like, that's
he had a very famous career as a I would not say vocalist, but he used to do a lot of spoken word songs.
Vocal interpretation, I guess.
Yes.
You would say.
And that's part of that that's what you're hearing. So that was part of what he did. Like I said, there was a few other odd ones. I'm trying to find them in my system right now. Maybe I'll do one more with you if I can find a couple quick ones. That would be too easy. I know which one I want to find. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, I got one more ready. Here it comes. Let's see. Okay, here we go. See if you can get this. This is an actor.
Santa works all day in his workshop, making a lot of games and toys.
Now, first off, he sounds like the Half-Man, just for the record. So just...
And one day he hops in his sleigh to bring them to the girls and boys. Santa's just as nice.
That is correct. Good job by you. That is Joe Pesci.
Yeah, Joe, it is.
Joe Pesci sings If It Doesn't Snow This Christmas. There's a murderer out there. And you go, what the hell is he doing? Actually, he was a guitar player back in the 50s.
Joe Pesci.
Yes, he actually sang on some a couple of big songs back in the day. I have to look it back up. But Joe Pesci was a guitar player for some band, kind of a famous band in New York City.
Really?
Yeah, you gotta dig into these things, man. I got no life, man. Sometimes I'm up at night and I find something and then it just takes me on a road. I just don't know where it's gonna go.
I've discovered things maybe I don't want to know about.
Exactly. Some
things
about
I shouldn't even found out about.
Exactly. So, but yeah, you find some interesting things and you go, oh my God, he sang a song and he's actually a decent singer. Actually, if you listen to some of his real music, it's actually not terrible. So, but we'll maybe next week we'll play a couple of his videos of him playing some real songs and all of that. So, Jeff, we did a couple. Maybe we'll do a few more later. I'll pop up a few more. You did a good job picking out the celebrities. And
Joe Pesci, man, I'm still thinking Donder. I can't.
All right, I got to play you one more. Hold on, I'm gonna play you one. I'm going to play you one more. Hold on a second. I love doing this. I don't know. Maybe you're bored by this, but I'm having fun with it.
Keep it going.
Hold on. I hope you guys are having fun along with us, Jeff and I. Let's see. Okay, try this one. This should be pretty easy. Let's see if you know who this is. Why is this not playing? Oh, that's why.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used.
Any idea? This is tough.
Johnny Mathis.
Anything I'm playing you would be somebody who's not a what I would consider a professional singer and is much more well known for his acting ability. This guy would be known much more known as for his acting ability. He was a bit guy. He was a small player on a pretty decent show back in the 50s and 60s, and then had his own show for a while. I'll give you a little bit more.
The treetops glisten and children listen to hear.
Any idea?
Bob Newhart.
Nope, not even close.
Tim Conway.
Nope. Was definitely a comedic actor. Let's put it this way. He was much more known for his weird voice.
No, I have no idea.
Let me see. Hold on. I'll give you a hint. Hold on. I'll tell you who it is. Hold on. It is. Let's see if you know this voice, Jeff. Do you know who this guy is? Let's try that. See if that works.
There's our objective, Sergeant.
Nope.
The squad.
Nope.
Wow. Thought you was the enemy. Get on, you knucklehead, down.
It was a little too angry. Just name it, and I'll do it. This will give me a chance.
Will you knock it off and listen?
Okay.
Any idea who Gomer Pyle is?
Yeah, Jim Nevis.
That's who you were listening to sing.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to find a clean cut. That was Jim Nevis. Jim Nevis actually was a trained operatic singer.
Yeah.
And that's who that was.
I knew.
That's who that was, Jeff.
Jim Nevis. Is he still alive?
I don't believe so.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't believe so. That's, I might have one more queued up ready for you. See if it's still here.
He died in 2017. Oh, boy.
Let's see.
James Thurston Nabors.
James Thurston Nabors? Never. I did not know that was his name.
Yeah.
It's not here anymore. I was hoping there was one more I had for you queued up. It's not queued up, so I'll have to come back to it a little later. But Jeff and I are doing a little fun, having a little fun on Christmas. Jeff, Merry Christmas, Patrick. Thank you very much. Appreciate it as Jeff and I go through a little memory lane of people.
Merry Christmas, Patrick, without a doubt.
Yeah, so we're having some fun.
He had an alleged relationship with Rock Hudson.
Yes, I think I read that. I was doing a little Rock Hudson research not too long ago for some reason.
Why?
I don't know. Something came up at work, and I was looking for some information, and one of it was on Rock Hudson, and then I saw he had some different relationships. Let's try this. How about? Well, I got one more for you. Ready?
Okay.
Let's see.
Go help people. Come on,
we're through the commercial here as we have some fun with some. Let's see if you guys can figure out who this is singing this song.
Come in. Merry Christmas.
Right, hold on. I'm gonna cover up until he starts singing the song. Hold on a second.
Red Fox.
You've got him.
Flat.
Hold on. I'm gonna play it for you. Yes. Hold on.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carol.
Jeff, you just never know who's going to sing in the middle of a sitcom, Jeff. You just never know who's singing in the middle of a sitcom.
I caught that from the beginning.
Yes.
Because once I started hearing the opening of it,
yes.
I was like, I got to listen. And
I was trying to cover it up so I could get to him singing.
The demographic led me to believe that it was Kirk Franklin. It was the only other person of color at that time that I would remember would be famous, you know, might have been fucking AJ from Good Times. It certainly didn't sound like him.
Yeah, I think that was him, though.
Finelli.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Finelli, Merry Christmas. Let's see if I got one more, if I got anybody in. Nope. All right, so now I got nothing else queued up right now. I'll have to come back to it a little bit. But we're having some fun right here. We played some old Christmas songs. We did Art Carney and Dominic the Donkey. We snuck in Jim Nabors. We snuck in, who else we've had doing it? Oh, Joe Pesci singing some Christmas tunes. William Shatner. We had a little William Shatner Christmas.
Yeah.
So we'll have some fun with that through the course of the show. But let's talk a little Christmas. So, Jeff, what's on the plate for you and the missus?
Well, today we went out to the Price Club.
Uh-huh.
And we figured that we'd still be at the Price Club.
Pending the...
What happened, I thank God for COVID. You know, 3 days before, 2 days before Christmas, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Nobody was in the fucking...
Really?
Oh, man. Dude, we went to the Price Club and the mall and was still home in under 3 hours.
Wow, not bad.
Yeah.
Wow, not bad. Oh, by the way, we've been banned for from YouTube, you and I. The show has been removed for excessive strikes against their community standards. Just for
Serious? Such as what?
Well, the big ones we seem to have gotten was there was a couple where I played some clips that might not have been that might have been covered by copyright, which, you know, it's not too bad. But the big strike was we did a couple of shows where we did some COVID commentary, and it went against their community standards. So I've appealed it, but it seems like we are punished from YouTube for expressing our opinions on COVID.
By how long?
It didn't say. I think it's a couple of weeks. But there were two. All of our shows in December so far have been removed from YouTube, from our YouTube page.
Get the fuck out.
I'm not. If you go to our YouTube page, they're December 2nd, 9th, and 16th shows do not appear on our YouTube page.
Wow.
Yep. So we've violated the COVID cops. We are not allowed to express our opinion about the fake viruses and all that stuff. Yes, you're right, Patrick. We have no standards. You're 100% right.
Yeah, standards, they're just low. That's all.
Yeah, we do have them. It's just they're very low.
Why would they try on standards? Come on.
Yes. So I just wanted to let you know we've done a good job. We've been banned from YouTube. Maybe somebody will start like a. Like I did when you got banned off of Facebook. Maybe somebody will start a benefit concert for the two of us.
Jesus.
So, yes, I had to go digging because I was trying to set up the show this week, and I'm trying to – I set it up with Facebook and then with YouTube. You press a couple buttons, and it automatically goes to those two locations, and we get people watch on both. And it would not let me set it up, and I had to go digging through emails, and I found an email on my Gmail account, which I never use – that's code that YouTube contact alerted me to say you violated our standards and your show is being removed temporarily till such time as they let us back on. So we're only on Facebook at this point, but I actually feel good that we've been struck by the tech police. If you know what I mean, I'm happy with it.
Well, listen, whatever. I don't understand it.
We don't have to.
I just texted my wife to tell her that we got banned from YouTube.
Yes, we are. You can put that on your resume, Jeff. You've been banned from Facebook and now YouTube.
And threatened to be banned from Instagram.
That's okay. So you're right.
Let me tell you something. Instagram don't pull no shit. you pop a few things on Instagram that they don't like, and right away you start getting, this goes against our community standards. And then you feel like a big dark figure, like looking over you, like, well, you know, it's pretty rough.
Well, you know, what I like about it is somebody actually had to go listening to our show to find this.
Maybe somebody complained.
I don't know. It's a great. Maybe it's Patrick. Maybe Patrick, did you complain to a YouTube about our show and our standards? Because seems like somebody might have ratted us out, Jeff.
I doubt it'd be Patrick. Patrick shows up every week and fucking agrees with half the shit we say.
That's true. Maybe it's Finelli. Finelli may be one of those rats from the old Brooklyn neighborhood.
No offense, but if this guy keeps coming week after week after week,
yeah,
he don't have nothing to do on Thursday nights. He ain't going to rat us out.
That's true. We love Patrick. We love having him every week with us. He's one of the diehards. You got Patrick and my friend Matt. He's always in there listening to us. So, and Johnny Collins usually pops up every week. Well, we just had Paul, and he disappeared. So we'll get Paul on in a minute. So, but it was a price club today. Tomorrow's what?
Well, tomorrow ain't going anywhere.
Okay.
So, it definitely ain't the Israelis, bro. It definitely ain't that.
No, they're ducking. They're still ducking under the tables from the Palestinians.
Listen,
from the Palestinians.
Sending us certificates to learn that shit, that crazy ass fighting that they do that they kick everybody's ass with. They want us to come over there and learn. I got no visa. Fuck that.
All right, Finelli. I'm sorry. It's not Finelli. Finelli's definitely is old school. He's not riding on anybody.
Wait a minute. Is this the guy, Finelli?
Finelli.
Certain things shouldn't be said like what? He's the one that was laughing at the Pink Macanudo thing.
That's true. He was a big on the Pink Macanudo thing. So I'm not sure.
Pinky Mac.
So, yeah, so we're banned from YouTube, which I put as a feather in our cap. So tomorrow you guys are home, and then Saturday out to Jersey?
Yeah. Unless, God forbid, somebody gets sick and shit, you know, with the fuck with all of this shit going on. But it was pretty – I spent so much money today. It was unbelievable.
Did you?
A thing of four lobster tails. $75.
Oof.
Yeah, that's not bad. Okay. It's bad, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Bad. Okay, little guy.
Yeah.
Okay. So then me, because I got a uniform allowance and I was like, I'm eating this shit tonight. So I got one pack of king crab legs, which looks like it was basically one and a half legs broken in half and put in a package. So I'm like, all right, you know, I just want to have them. So I don't know what you guys are going to have, but we're going to start off with antipas and then shrimp cocktail, baked clams, fried scallops.
Nice.
Shrimp and scallop scampi. And then we're going to have the lobster and the king crab legs. That'll be it for us.
Hey, Johnny. Yeah. Merry Christmas, Johnny boy.
So.
Oh, good.
That'll be, how about you guys? Being that your plans kind of changed now, right?
So officially, I got the word official, now that I'm home, that my wife went to work today. And as part of her job, she has to be tested. She works in the ER in a local hospital. And for the first time in what's going on, my wife tested positive. So she is now quarantined, and now I am quarantined. So I will be, for the first time in 54 years, I will be missing Christmas dinner at my parents' house.
Wow, that sucks.
Yeah, and Saturday, which was going to be some of the kids coming over and some future in-laws coming over, has now been canceled. So, I don't know. Right now, I believe my dad's dropping off a care package tomorrow. I had bought some food for next weekend. I bought a nice tomahawk steak. And some fixings for next week, which I think I will be cooking on Saturday. And then Sunday will be probably a mishmash as I watch a lot of football. For the first time in 50-something years, I will not be with my entire family for Christmas. And it's kind of heartbreaking. I got to be honest with you. I was very upset. I don't know what the short-term future is. I'm going to test myself tomorrow and then again on Sunday. Hopefully they stay negative, and then I don't know. I guess I'll have to check in with my bosses and see, you know, if they want me to stay off, stay work from home, come in, I guess depending on some of my tests. But my weekend is kind of, you know, not what I want it to be. Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, it does. I'm going to make the best of it.
Bad feeling with this one that this one seems to be spreading quick. I think we're all going to get hit with this one sooner or later.
Jeff, here's the thing. If you read anything you read about, it tells you the same thing. It's very infectious. It's flying around, but nobody's getting sick from it. Nobody's, you know, very, very few people are winding up. The hospitals are busy testing people and giving them infusions and all this other stuff, but nobody's getting on ventilators. So, you know, it's just one of those things. It's people are going to have to just deal with it. But like South Africa, they had a big flurry, and then it just fell off the edge of the earth over there. So they're saying that in the next 2 or 3 weeks, it's just going to basically disappear to run its course.
Pretty amazing that it came fucked up Christmas and New Year's, though, right?
Yeah, you know, if you want to get the conspiracy theory working, yeah, I agree. So I don't know. So right now I am homebound. We'll probably do a quick escape tomorrow morning to pick up a few supplies and a couple last-minute things, but I'm going to avoid my family because I don't want to put them in a position, where somebody gets sick from it.
Yeah, I don't blame you, man.
You know, I mean, it's one thing to be around a few strangers. That's another thing, you know. Johnny boy, I hope you're feeling better, John. I hope you're feeling better, my brother. So a lot of Christmas memories. We'll play a few more Christmas songs as the night goes on. We'll do a couple. I'll get a couple more celebrity ones up there so Jeff can do some guessing. We're going to talk a lot of football tonight. We're going to talk a lot about the NFL. We got three games left, and there's a lot of people still hanging around, Jeff. There's still a lot of teams involved.
Well, that's because of the the way everybody's rolling around the 500 mark. There's only a couple teams that are really ahead of anybody else, if they're ahead of anybody else.
Yeah, very true.
You know what I mean? So this is what you get. I kind of don't like it, you know, but it is what it is.
No, absolutely. But listen, let's turn to a team that is actually, I think, on the rise. They made some great moves this season. They've kind of overshadowed their quote-unquote big brothers across town with some great moves, including their hiring of their manager. And I also want to get to talk about – finally, I'm going to get to talk about the Beatles and their documentary Get Back, because Jeff refuses to watch TV.
That's not true.
You refuse to watch TV.
That's not true. I watched 15 minutes a night.
That's your limit?
Yeah, it just so happens that it's going to take like 7 years to finish watching all of it, but it is what it is.
Well – We got a buddy on that we've known forever who is, I'm sure, have watched the whole thing. He's also a big Met fan, and he's going to help us talk about the Mets and the Beatles. So without further ado, let's bring on our good friend Paul Gill. What's up, Paulie?
Yo, what's up, fellas?
What's going on?
Merry Christmas, Paul.
Where were you up in the mountains? There's a bear behind you.
I am up in the mountain house, guys.
I see that with all the
I'm doing work. My thing. I just threw another log in the fire over there. I'm doing my thing here.
City boy up, city boy in the sticks. You gotta like it.
Oh, dude, you gotta see me swinging an axe. I'm telling you.
Is that where you guys will be spending Christmas the entire weekend?
We're gonna stay up here until Monday. Yeah, Tyler skis for a couple of days, so we're gonna be here. You know, I did the Santa Claus bags up here, so you know, we're all good.
Nice, good for you. That's good. Okay, so make sure you give Julia and the boys our best, and a Merry Christmas to everybody. As just sipping on a little scotch, I'm a little scotch working there.
Always.
So, Paulie, I want to start off with the Beatles, because I do want to talk Showalter with you, but I want to start off with the Beatles thing. And I'm assuming at this point you've watched the entire thing.
Twice.
Nice. I watched the last episode twice. I didn't get to the first two. I'm going to give you my take a little bit on it and then see if you agree or disagree. Here's the big points I came out of this with. Paul McCartney was the adult in the room. He was the apex. He was the focal point. He was the guy running the ship. To me, Lennon looked like he was partaking a little too much of the maybe heroin, but he seemed to just be happy to go along and play. It was amazing to watch how these songs came together in a short amount of time with a simple little phrase or a riff, and the next thing you know, you have songs that have lasted 50 years. George Harrison was about the most miserable person in the world, and I consider that the reason why the Beatles broke up, because he just didn't look happy being there. The film itself, 50 years old, amazing how well the film itself was. You know, you watch a lot of those old stuff, it's grainy, it's that, nothing like it. And it was monotonous, of just playing songs and songs and songs, but it was the greatest monotony I've ever watched in my life.
Wow. I like your description of it. The first thing I would say is that it was not an easy watch.
No.
It was not an easy watch for the greatest fan or the non-fan. It was 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It was this monotonous studio thing. And, you know, I've been in the studio a whole bunch of times myself. I hate the studio for that reason, because it's just over and over and over mm-hmm. again, and little things. Everybody's got an opinion, and let's try this and let's try that. And you're doing the same friggin' four bars
mm-hmm.
for like 9 hours. It's crazy. But, you know, like what I took from it was, you know, as a huge Beatle fan, you know, we get to see the videos and the interviews and the stuff that they've let us see to this point. You see this, and you see sort of a completely unfiltered, like, here's a couple of cameras. Actually, they had a lot of cameras
yeah.
in that room. They did it really well, like you said. And you can see all of the, like, I mean, Paul being like that A personality,
oh.
pushing. You know, if his opinion wasn't what everybody wanted, you know, he'd push more. You know, like
mm-hmm.
you see John sitting back, like looking at Paul and looking at George and knowing that it was going in the right direction, but like not necessarily being comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
You see Ringo in the background.
He didn't talk.
Like, let me tell you something. Ringo, not at all, but Ringo Starr.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we heard in our lives as musicians, Ringo Starr was a shitty drummer? Let me tell you something. Ringo Starr was the best drummer for the greatest band that ever lived.
No
because
argument.
Because he sat back, he did his thing. When it was time for him to perform, he performed,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't the fourth voice in that room. You know, George, like you mentioned George.
Yeah.
George had this thing that, like, he was – I mean, to tell you the truth, George was kind of stamped down
yeah.
for like half of the Beatle career.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, he had songs in him. He had things in him. And mm-hmm. like to have these two strong personalities like John and Paul
mm-hmm.
and to have to kind of like, hey, guys, I have a little song. You want to hear it?
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. like he had it the roughest. And, you know, in the end, you look at the catalog and you look at the George songs. They're all fucking great.
Yeah.
Like all of them are great,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the thing is, it's like, I mean, look, they were such a unique band
mm-hmm.
and to be able to see 9 hours of their life in the studio was a gift. It was a Christmas gift from it. You know, I'll tell you what though, I would love if somebody put out the Sgt. Pepper.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. Studio version. Oh my God, I would kill for that. But I thought it was incredible.
mm-hmm.
I think you could learn a lot from it as a musician. You could learn a lot from it, and you know, just as a guy relating to like three guys that you work with, you can really get a lot from it because I mean it's not easy to work with people, and to be that brilliant for that period of time, although it was a short period of time. Was just genius, and we saw it in that video.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, I know you haven't watched much of it at all, but, you know, the thing you get out of it is you're watching, you know, like, you know, I always wondered what the process was, you know, when you saw these guys. And what you saw was, whether it was in the studio, maybe in their hotel rooms or their houses, you saw how they just walked in with this much of a song. Like, McCartney walks in with, like, four bars of Let It Be, and the next thing you know, 2 weeks later, it's this monstrous song with 50 years later, it's still one of the greatest songs of all time. And it's amazing how it just goes from a thought process and all of a sudden it comes out of there, and they get back real quick. You know, they're playing the song and he's basically humming and a couple of words pop out, and the next thing you know, it's becoming phrases. Jeff, it was insane to watch how just a simple idea became this legendary song, and how quick.
Listen, there's no doubting what they did in music. And I'm not a Beatles fan. But the one thing I have to say is that the Beatles, to me, and this is just my opinion, so, you know, they kind of followed a pattern. You know, their songs weren't out there. It wasn't like some bands, they do certain things. They change things up. They kind of were like a pop band. They did a pattern, and it worked for them. You know, what could you do? There's no denying what they did, without a doubt. They were there at the right time. Would they have survived in another time period? I don't know. Would the Beatles exist if they were an 80s band or a 90s band? You know?
See, Jeff, I disagree with the pattern thing, though, because if you really think about it, that early stuff, the 62 to 64 thing, that was patternish for sure. But then when they got to 65 and they started messing with Rubber Soul and Revolver, and then they got to Sgt. Pepper, each one of those records, I mean, they started going nuts. And the God's honest truth is because they were so friggin' huge that they came to the conclusion, we can do anything we want. Like, hey, you know what? Let's start turning tape backwards. Let's get an orchestra in here. So, like, they did a lot of shit in that period, in that mid-60s, that was – it was legendary because it had never been done, and frankly, it has never been done again. You know, like
well, I mean, just look at that. Just look at Harrison's 8-track machine that they used in there. How they couldn't get it anywhere else, and had to bring his personal equipment in. You know, like you think about, and now look, think about what they record with. It's amazing, but you know, you think about the Beatles. Here's what also came out, Paul, and you're a much bigger Beatle fan than I am. We all think, at least for me, they had two different careers. There's that early Beatles, the poppy stuff, and then there's that later Beatles stuff. It's a little more grown up. It's a little more out there, some of it. But what I didn't know was, you know, you think about that early period, and when they recorded that, what is it, 68, 69, they hadn't played out together in 3 years. They hadn't performed together, and essentially that becomes their last performance. And if you think about it, all the albums that came out during that time, you know, nowadays, with all the social media and all that, it would be a bigger deal than it probably was then. People probably didn't even realize that they weren't playing. So, you know, think about it. They had a very short period of time, you know, early 60s to 66, 65, that they actually were a touring band. And then after that.
Exactly. And you know, the thing is, while that was horrible because people couldn't see them and all people wanted to do was see them live. What it did was it allowed them to just focus on the studio. And in a way, the Get Back video that we just saw was a microcosm of what that was. It, like, every single record, these guys went in the studio. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, don't forget the fact that one of the brilliance about the Beatles is that John and Paul had this sort of internal, never-spoken competition.
Mm-hmm.
They each wanted to write a better song.
Right.
And the thing is, every time one of them came in with a song, sometimes they really got together and did it together.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it was a John Paul, sometimes it was a Paul song. But, like, it just brought the level up to a point where – and that's where George was like, Jesus Christ, every song that comes in is amazing. And I got songs, and I – hey, guys, you know, listen to me. Like, that was the cool thing. But, you know – the other thing, too, is that you think about everything from the beginning to the end. George's part was something that he wrote.
Yes.
Like these guitar things that he did were just very cool. It was the color on top of everything, not to mention his third vocal. I mean,
and his voice is so different than the other two guys that it kind of filled it a little bit more. It gave it a little more depth because it wasn't the same kind of vocal that McCartney and Lennon had, which is so close to each other.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, just the combination of those three guys writing music, and not for nothing, you know, Ringo wrote a couple of pretty good songs too. You know, like, it's just like these four guys, like, just to think about four guys getting together in any era, in any style of music, and doing what they did on a consistent basis and changing throughout it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this band was together. I mean, from the first record to the last record, we're talking what, 9 years?
Right. And three of those years they didn't tour, basically didn't talk to each other. You know, think of it. And then 50 years later, they're still considered the greatest band there ever was.
Exactly. Well, certainly to me.
Yeah. But a lot of people, listen, I'm not the biggest Beatle fan in the whole world, but you got to look up and say to this day, their music is still, you know, it's still there. It's still, to me, the best band of all time. I mean, I'm not my favorite band of all time, but to me, it's the best band, if you want to put it on record. And the only band who's ever retired and stayed retired, by the way. So,
yeah,
So just for the record, it may be the only band that ever retired and stayed that way. But the dynamic
was. I wish that wasn't true.
It's true. I got you. But you know what?
I wish it wasn't.
The dynamic was the most important, the most the best part. Sitting back and watching those guys in a room. Ringo, at this point, I didn't know if his vocal cords were still in because he never said a word. Harrison just kind of sulked in the corner, and you could see how he felt outside. But the thing that I didn't realize was how much of an A personality in that band that McCartney was. I mean, he was literally everything that anybody did. He was changing it, correcting it, or saying, that's not what I'm hearing. And I didn't realize that he had such a – now, maybe it was just that album. I don't know. Over with Lennon. Lennon just seemed to be like, I'm going to play it. If you like it, great. If not, tell me what you want me to do. And it was amazing to watch them just riff and play other people's stuff. But it was the dynamic was the true dynamic of a band. You know, you got the two A personalities. You know, you got the A personality, another guy who's right there, and then two guys, you know, who just kind of are part of the band at that point.
Right. You know, the funny thing about that is one of the greatest lines of that whole thing was when Paul and George were talking and they were working out a song, and Paul was trying to like give George, you know, I want you to do this, I want you to do that. And George just said, look, I'm just here to please you.
Yes.
Like, and that was just so like, it was very snotty to say that to him. Mm-hmm. But the God's honest truth is he's saying, look, I know you're the boss. I just want to please you, you know?
Yeah.
And that was the dynamic in the band. And, you know, with all of that, and frankly, another thing I haven't mentioned yet is I don't know how they got through those sessions without somebody choking freaking Yoko Ono to death.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, come on. Yeah, my wife and I commented on that 100 times. Like, she's other than on the roof when they were playing, she was literally in every shot imaginable.
On his lap.
The other thing,
I don't understand that. Is somebody that plays in a band and has played in a band for years and has wives and girlfriends, you know, it's my wife would never come to a band rehearsal. I think she's been to one once.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because the other guys in their bands, they brought their girls, and it was kind of like, you know, we all hung out together type of thing. And
right.
Just hung out and had a little fun. My wife would never do that. It's almost like overstepping their bounds.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's a bar band we're talking about. You know, I don't understand how Yoko Ono had the balls to go in there and you know,
do
whatever it is that she did.
Yeah. And then that to be subjected to her singing or whatever, that screeching that she, I mean, it was amazing to watch, like, the dynamic in the room was she's screeching in the background. You're going, what does everybody really think?
While they were playing?
Yeah. Well, there were times, I guess, they were breaking and whatever. And then her and Lennon would do it. There was a couple times McCartney was playing some stuff and she was just, I don't even know what you call it. It was screeching.
It was
performance art.
Weird. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Performance art.
You know what? There were people that I played with in the past that when they were tuning their guitar, I would even go over and ask them a question because I'm like, the guy's tuning his guitar. I just leave him alone, you know, because it's a process. Then there's other guys that they could be playing their heart out, and you could be like, hey, you going to watch a football game later?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it depends on who it is that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But, like, something like that, I mean, come on. These are guys that were so established at that time.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, how the fuck do you even open your mouth and say anything?
Yeah.
That was John's fault.
Yes, absolutely.
It was John's fault.
Absolutely.
He allowed her in to this group. Look, when you're in a band, I hate to say it, I'm married. I've been married for 100 years. I'm super loyal. But when it comes to the band is the band, and everything else is everything else, you know? And John allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
And he brought it in. And you know what? Like some Beatle historians say that Yoko being part of those sessions actually kind of changed what the Beatles were doing. I don't see that. But, you know, maybe it was attention. Maybe it was something, you know, maybe the way they played, maybe George played certain solos a little more angry because he was looking at her. You know, I don't know. But, you know, some people say that. I don't.
I tell you the truth. I still come down to after watching that, saying that I think it was Harrison and his disdain for McCartney and his personality and taking over the band the way he did. That I don't know what eventually got them to all walk away from it. Okay, Jeff. I thought that was an interesting dynamic with him, and the fact that he basically quit, and they had to go talk him into it, and that they were talking about bringing in people like Eric Clapton to replace him. It was, to me, that was incredible to listen to.
I'll tell you what, it would have been a freaking disaster if Harrison really left that band.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it would have been horrific. And the thing is, you could see in the video that we watched how, you know, he could get to the conclusion that, dude, I'm done with this. I'm already a millionaire. I don't need to do this.
Right.
I got 50 million songs in my back pocket. I'll go write a solo record, which he did.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm out. And, you know, the thing is, the guys were smart enough to realize, you know, guys, we got to get George back here.
Yes.
This is important, you know.
Yeah. So, no, and you know, listen, I think what they said before each episode was, it was a depiction of what actually was going on. Like, there was 900 hours or 700 hours of video, and what they wanted to do was capture a video to show, you know, what was actually happening. So they didn't want to show all the best material, all the worst material, the worst side of somebody, all the best side. They wanted to give you a really good relative thought process of what happened in that month of them getting together, and the process of getting just up to figure out how to get up on the roof. And then, again, I thought it was a real show up there. I didn't realize it was only, you know, four or five songs, which they played a couple of times each. And then they got off the roof, which was scary enough to watch them up on the roof. But, you know, to me, it was again, monotony, but it was such a piece of history that I enjoyed every second of it, because I got to watch, to me, the two greatest songwriters of my generation, again, with the four of them, but come together on how they put this music together and walked out of there 2 weeks later with just an amazing amount of songs. And then Billy Preston, I never realized that he basically was part of that entire album of session and played up on the live, on that live version. I never realized that was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, like, the Billy Preston influence was, like, if you look at some of that in the video, like, John would look at Billy and say, you know, do like a little boogie woogie. And all of a sudden that would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That's part of the song that we ended up hearing on the record. So Billy was important at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing is that I think Billy was almost like, for lack of a better word, almost like a little Band-Aid over the whole thing. Because it's like they had been the four of them in the room for so long.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, now Yoko's coming in and now Linda's coming in and there's 50 million other hanger-oners, as we saw in the video. And it's like, you know, let's get another musical voice in here. And Billy coming in, and he was smiling and he was happy and he was bringing a good vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of bad vibes in that room.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, very much.
And Billy brings in the good vibe and he starts playing and, you know, I mean, you guys know, you guys both play. When you start playing and maybe you're not in the best mood and you start playing and some little groove hits or something, and you look at each other and you're like the happiest you could ever be, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how you make great music. And that's what they did.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. I'd like them to do another set, but it really wouldn't work because you've already seen the end. So it almost doesn't matter, but it was fantastic. And I enjoyed the other thing coming out of it was I've never seen people smoke that much in my entire life. And all they ate was bread with jam. And I don't think they ate anything else but bread and jam. And the cigarette smoke was just mind-boggling. So,
yeah.
English thing, man. Yeah.
Holy cow. Everybody smoked. I mean, if it wasn't cigarettes, it was pipes or cigars. The other thing I didn't realize, how much Glyn Johns had of the production of that, and how little it seemed George Martin's was part of that whole thing. You know, again, maybe it was just the way they edited it, but it didn't look like he was the voice behind what was being put on tape.
I agree. I think that he was there almost like a father figure, like a
ceremonial.
Yes, almost. Yeah. I think that by that point, I think that the whole band had been like, okay, we did George Martin a lot. We love George Martin. we owe George Martin.
Mm-hmm.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
But, you know, we need to move to the next level. Like, it was the late 60s. Everybody
yeah.
was doing the hippie thing. And, you know, they were like, let's do something. But George is part of us. And, you know, I love seeing him there. I mean,
oh yeah,
I love seeing that he was part of it. But, yeah, I don't think he really lent a lot to that particular recording.
Didn't seem like it. And then the last parts for me on this is, I know Jeff's got some questions he wants to jump in with, but the rooftop stuff I thought was very fun, and it was amazing to watch that come together. But then the whole, you know, the cops and the people on the street, like the whole thing wrapped up was just amazing. Like, my first question was, why wouldn't they just go get a permit or go down and tell the cops we're going to perform and avoid all the hassles? And it's the Beatles. Why would anybody bother them?
You know what? Because at the end of the day, all musicians
mm-hmm.
are punks. We're all punks. You know, we're all like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do, and I'm going to do it whether you like it or not. And that was kind of the point. You know, I loved when they were kind of planning that. And one guy, I can't remember who it was, said, hey, are we sure the roof can hold the weight?
Yes.
I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
They had no idea. They were like, fuck it, turn the amps up there. Da, 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 we're all good to go. Let's go.
Yeah, we're not sure we can hold it. So let's put all of our equipment, a bunch of cameras, and a bunch of people just hanging out, all standing on a roof that we're not sure. If you watch it, the boards were bent as they were walking on them.
It was great.
But again, the quality of the sound, quality of the film itself was amazing to me. How clear the recording was, even on the rooftop, how clear the recording was on it. I'm not a studio engineer. I don't know how they did it, but I tell you, the quality. Now, the stuff that they recorded early in that big room wasn't great, but when they moved to the studios, much better. But the rooftop amazed me, you know, how the quality of the music was and the film.
I mean, part of that was the fact that they had rehearsed that stuff so much.
Oh, my God.
That they were their performance was going to be impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, you know, I mean, I know every gig I do and every song that I do in a gig, I fuck up at least once. Okay. These guys, not at all.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it was just, they knew what they were doing. And
they,
you know,
they fuck up just as much as we do. They just fuck up differently than we do. You know what I mean? When we play, when the thing is in E and your fucking hand slips off and you fucking hit an F by accident and you're like, oh, right? But when these guys are playing a fucking, you know, 16th note and they hit a fucking 8th note instead, you'll be like, oh, I really fucked that one up, man. Did you hear that? Like, yeah, I did that third measure. They start using terms and I don't even know what the fuck they mean.
Yes.
You know, because they're such pros and
that. And like my last thought on this is I want to know who decided to dress George Harrison every practice. The guy had the funky.
I'll tell you what,
go ahead.
I think it was George. George had that thing. Like, it's funny too because my youngest son now is doing shit like that.
Oh really?
Like Tyler is like he is experimenting with his look. He's doing all kinds of shit. He wants to dye his hair black tonight. Like it's just, you know, he's got that thing. George was that guy.
If George looked like he threw all his clothes in a suitcase, threw the suitcase up in the air, and whatever landed on the bed, that's what he was putting on that day. Because I'm looking at it, and it was the funkiest clothes I've ever seen. But I'll end it with this for me, and then I'll turn it over to Jeff before we go to Buck Showalter stuff. I will tell you that it was the best thing I've ever watched from a historical standpoint. Because I got to watch this amazing band whose songs 50 years later still resonate to people and watch that whole thing come together. It was great. Again, I've been recommending it every week to people. Even if you're not a Beatles fan, if you're a music fan, you got to invest some time in it. Even if you just kind of glide through the first two episodes and then watch the last one to see the performance, it's well worth it if you're a music fan, right? Would you agree?
I agree 1,000%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Cool. Good job, Jeff. Good. You had some questions you wanted to throw in. So do it. Come.
If I'm listening to you guys talk about this, and there's a couple things that nobody's ever really brought up, at least that I've never heard anybody bring up before, and that's what happened after the Beatles. You know, everybody talks about the Beatles, and that's great, but after the Beatles, and Paul, this is going to be more you because I know that you know more about this stuff, but. And Tom,
no, okay.
when did you guys remember hearing Wings for the first time? You know what I mean? Wow. Like, I remember they came out and they were another big band. They, I don't think they were out as long as the Beatles were, but everything that Paul McCartney did with his wife, they put out a lot of good music, Wings. A little bit heavier than the Beatles, and a little bit maybe more time period.
Definitely.
Authentic, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But what is your thoughts on Wings and for what Paul McCartney did with Wings?
I'll tell you what, the first Wings record that I heard, or I shouldn't say that I heard, that I sat down and listened to a lot was Wings at the Speed of Sound. And that's with Silly Love Songs and Let 'Em In and all that. And I'll tell you what, it at that point, it was that record that made me decide that Paul was my favorite Beatle, you know, because what he was doing on that record is what I really love the most, the Beatles.
Okay.
Like, I mean, then again, like, you get to the later records of Wings, the live record was friggin' amazing. Just, it rocked. Hmm. It totally rocked. The musicians were incredible. I mean, Denny Lane was awesome. I mean, it was actually, you know, I mean, that's another reason why I say McCartney is the greatest rock star that ever lived, because he had two incredible bands,
And then what he did, but then what he also did solo, and then what he did with, you know, duets and all that stuff. I say the same thing. I'm going to call it our generation. Paul McCartney is the greatest musician there is. There's no doubt in my mind. I wonder what Lennon would have done had he lived. You know, would he have done more? Because he had that whole period where he was just disappeared and did a lot of hippie stuff. But I'm curious what would have happened had he lived. Would he have had a second career, so to speak?
You know what, John, he always tried to like sort of push the envelope, like with concepts and things and all kinds of stuff. But the God's honest truth is all of his stuff had a pop basis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, if he hadn't passed away at 40 years old, at 80 years old, at in 1980 when he did, I think he would have wrote a lot of really great pop songs.
Especially for the 80s, yeah.
You know, I mean, I think he would have been... I think he would have been huge. He would have been huger.
Yeah.
You know?
The Beatles were effectively over for, what, 11 years by the time he died?
Yeah.
All right, so think,
roughly.
Think back in your own life, 11 years. When you look back at it, it's not that long of a period of time. So he was barely out of the Beatles at that time by the time he got shot. But, you know, everybody brings McCartney more so because I think he had the broader career out of all of them.
Oh.
You know,
sure.
Definitely. But you know what? If you look at the records, though, Double Fantasy was a freaking amazing record. It was a chart topper.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
does that record go as far as it did if he doesn't get capped?
That's a great question. You know what? That is a great question.
When it doesn't get capped.
Yes, that's a great question.
That record, I bet you, doesn't sell half as many as it did.
But then again, his next record might have sold 10 times more.
How long before he died did that album come out?
I thought it was out when he died.
Yeah, I think it was
6 months.
Yeah, I was just saying it wasn't out very long, and it was obviously, you know, Woman was a huge song. There was a couple of big ones.
What's the name of that album?
Double Fantasy.
Double Fantasy.
Yeah, I want to say it came out in late 79.
I think
early 80, I'm going to say early 80, maybe you're right, Paul, 6 months prior. But, yeah, I would.
It was released November 17th, 1980.
Wow, so a month before he died.
Basically, just a couple days before. Didn't he get shot like December 8th?
Yes, December 8th, 1980, yeah.
Before he got shot.
Yeah.
Wow. So you know, that makes me think the record company took a hit out on him to boost the album sales.
But Jeff, to Jeff's point, it's a good one. You know, had he lived, would that album have been as big as it was? Because I'm sure the minute he died, people went running for his stuff, the Beatles stuff.
I have my mother and father who never bought albums before. I can't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure that they bought that album too. Knowing that he did. But you know, when you brought up the Speed of Sound album from Wings, a lot of those songs, had a lot of Beatles feel to it.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Is that album an extension of what Paul McCartney was doing with the Beatles? Like, did he come into his own yet at that point in time?
I think that that record was Paul doing a Beatle record
without
telling
Beatles.
Everybody what to do, mm-hmm. and everybody saying, yeah, you got it. I'll do exactly. All I want to do is please you.
Yeah, because you're Paul McCartney and we're not, yeah.
I mean, the guy was fresh out of the Beatles and stuff. You know, how are you going to go against what he says at that point? You know what I mean?
Right.
That's just me. That's the way I see it.
No, I think you're right. And I think it could be the Beatles album that he couldn't do with the Beatles. You know, it might have been stuff that he couldn't get them to play. And especially his way, obviously, now looking at how he was controlling things, you know, it just could have been the stuff that he wanted to do there but couldn't.
What were the songs that you mentioned in that album? Let Him In. Listen to What the Man
Said. Let Him In. No. That was a different record. Silly Love Songs.
Okay.
You know, but the thing about that record, too, is
I thought they were
Beatles. Totally. I mean, the other thing about that, though, is if you look at it, this is when he brought Linda into the band.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, Linda's playing keyboards and singing backup, and she has, I think it's two lead vocals.
Oh, really?
On it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Cook of the House is one of them, and there's another one that she sings lead on. So, you know, he was also kind of kowtowing to his wife.
Oh, yeah.
Thing, you know. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's McCartney. You could do whatever you want.
Well, that's just it. At that point, he could write the check, whatever he wants to do, because whatever he wants, the record labels, the bandmates, they're all going to do whatever he wants. It basically becomes Paul McCartney's band. You know, Paul McCartney and Wings was really just Paul McCartney at that point, with a bunch of good players who established at that point. But yeah, it's just an amazing dynamic watching all of that. And then, I would love to have seen what Lennon would have done after. And I just think that at some point you would have seen them all back on the stage together. Had he not died, you would have seen them, even if it was Live Aid or some sort of big thing. I would love to have seen the dynamic of those guys getting back on the stage together. Because, you know, watching the documentary, the one thing I caught out of was, it probably looked like the two of them didn't like each other, but they were still, every once in a while, would have that that goofing where they kind of like what they used to do, just kind of two old buddies who kind of like fell apart. But when they got in the same room together, it was kind of magical. And that was the sad part of watching that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, like they were kids together. Like,
yeah.
Like they wrote their first songs together.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did their first gigs together and a lot of them. And, you know, then they, you know, we've all done this to a certain degree. We've all grown up somewhat, right?
Yeah.
And
so,
as you grow up and you have other issues and wives and
mm-hmm.
mortgages and all kinds of shit that goes on in your life, you know, like things change. And then you're like, but every once in a while, you look at each other, the three of us do it all the time.
Sure.
You look at each other and we see each other when we were 16.
Correct. Yeah.
You know?
It's a great way.
Like, and that's what it was to them. And and it was beautiful. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, guys, the Hard Rock and Sports every Thursday night, Jeff and myself, and they're joined tonight by my good friend Paul Gill. We're talking about the Beatles documentary, Get Back. If you get a chance over the holiday break, invest some time in it. Again, if you got the time, watch all 9 hours. Catch part bits and pieces of the first two, but watch the last episode. Just the fact of how they wind up, they're going to be in Libya, they're going to be in this country, and next thing you know, they're on the roof trying to play a thing, and then the cops show up. It's just an amazing documentary, so I highly recommend it, and I'm glad Paul came on to give us his perspective as a big Beatle fan and let me bounce some stuff off of him, because just watching it and watching the vibe, it was amazing. So, but hope everybody gets well. Now, Paul, I want to get some baseball in with you before we lose you. A Met fan, you got to be excited. If you wrote up the script, Marte and that crowd, Scherzer, and then the icing on the cake is Buck Showalter. Go ahead, man. As a Met fan, you got to be sitting back going, all right, this is it. This is where we make our break.
I am cautiously ecstatic.
That's an interesting way to say it.
That's what I am. I am cautiously ecstatic. You know, like, I mean, look, getting Bucky in here
mm-hmm.
to manage this team is the only thing that made sense.
Yes.
We needed We needed a veteran manager with some serious pedigree,
mm-hmm.
a guy who knows how to cultivate young talent
mm-hmm.
and also knows how to manage these, like, extremely expensive kind of prima donna guys.
Sure. Yep.
Like, a guy who is going to make everybody on that team run to first base
yes.
and run for that fucking ball. You know, like, so, I mean, as far as Showalter goes, I mean, he ain't going to hurt us. Okay.
No.
And I haven't been able to say that about a manager in many, many years. Okay. So, like, I am really happy about him. You know, as far as the other moves that they've made, you know, I mean, getting Marte in here, I would have liked that to happen 2 years ago.
Yes.
I wish he was a little younger, but you know, he's a super solid guy. I think Escobar takes over for VR,
mm-hmm.
And I think that Kana, like, totally takes over for Conforto, and I think that Mark Kana is more of a professional, solid player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he may hit 240 every year, but he hits 240 every year.
But everybody hits 240 now.
Up and down.
But everybody hits 240. Yeah, that's the problem. Everybody hits 240 now. 240 is the new 300.
I think that, like, in terms of that, I'm content.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 1,000% done yet, though, because I still think that there's a couple of things. I think we need a reliever. We desperately need a lefty.
Yep.
In that pen.
Mm-hmm.
Desperately need a lefty. I think that the way to get that lefty is going to be via trade. I think.
Well, you got pieces now. You got pieces that are going to be extra pieces right now. Yeah.
Yeah, David Smith. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, if we've got to go into the farms to get the right guy, sure. You know, like, but we need that. And you know, with the starting pitching, I'm just kind of like, when you get to 3 and 4, I'd like to be a little better than I am.
Correct. You win the first two games. Yeah, of course. But again, there's some cautious optimism with 1 and 2. Number 2 is 37, going to be 38 years old. So, okay, you know, so healthy, great seasons. And I don't like the fact that we went through an entire season with DeGrom in and out, and nobody really announced what the problem was. Why was he out all that time? What was the problem? So, if DeGrom's healthy, yeah, easily the top two rotation of a rotation in the league. But there's a little bit of, you know, after that you got some question marks. And I'm gonna be the devil's advocate on Buck for you a little bit here. So you answer this for me. Buck's been around a long time. Mm-hmm. Buck is great building teams. Did it with the Yankees. Obviously did it with the Diamondbacks. Turned around the Texas Rangers, but never concealed the deal. Buck's one of those guys, 3 years, fantastic. On the fourth year, people are annoyed by him. Yeah, you know, his rules, his things. To me, this team is built to win right now with the age of some of the guys, especially your pitching staff, and you know, Marte and those guys. This team needs to win quick. Maybe next year and the year after. That would be the one negative on Buck. Smartest man in baseball as far as I'm concerned. I would be putting a guy on the bench next to him. Who's your future manager? Because you want him to learn from him.
Yeah.
You know, Buck's 65, and again, after 3-4 years, and it go through his career. Happens everywhere. Texas, Yankees, he builds them, he leaves, they win. He did it with the Yankees, did it with the Diamondbacks. You know, it happens all the way. So that's my one negative on Buck. I think it was the absolute best move they could have made, but win quick. Would you agree with all of that?
You know, I do, but, you know, like, the short and sweet of it is,
yeah.
I don't care. I mean, as long as Buck, like, gets this team together and makes them work together
mm-hmm.
and gets me there, mm-hmm. if he's gone in 3 years, God bless you.
Correct.
Thank you, Buck.
Right, absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
That's how I feel about it. I mean, because, I mean, you know the litany of managers that I've been through
sure.
in the last 20 years. Like,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If this guy's going to get it done finally, you know, while DeGrom can still pitch.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
While these guys are ready. Yeah. You know, it's.
He's going to. What you want from Buck right now is you love a championship, but at the very least, you like him to change the culture and establish the rules for the organization and the way they're going to do business for the next 10 years. This is how we do things. You
exactly.
run the ball out. This is how you wear your uniform. This is what you do when you're not around. If you want him to kind of build your franchise and give them their identity, and that, and then Buck's done his job. And then hopefully it just snowballs from there. Now, what do you do with Cano? What if there's no What if there is no DH next year? What do you do with Alonzo and Smith? And all? You know, you have some bulk of players now. You know, McNeil, like, what do you do with some of these guys? J.D. Davis, what happens with these guys? There are still some holes, you know, catcher. The kid's a good catcher. He didn't hit worth the shit last year. Give me some of the things that you're worried about.
Well, I'll tell you what. In my lineup for the Mets, I got McCann batting ninth.
Wow. Okay.
I got the DH in.
You got to hope so. Yeah. Yep. You got to hope so. Yeah. That's a big.
Did you ever?
No.
Think you'd hear me say that?
No. But with Alonzo at first. If you can move Dominic Smith to first and Alonzo is your DH, you're better. Much better team.
Absolutely. But the thing is, you know what? Offensively, I really think that the entire season depends on Francisco Lindor producing at some decent level, because Lindor is going to be, look, I mean, I think he could bat third, he could bat fifth. He's going to be extremely important in this lineup. And, you know, I'm of course making the, you know, optimistic Met fan assumption that Brandon Nimmo gives me a full year, which if he does, you're going to really see how good this guy is.
Yep.
That McNeil gives me a full year, and then everything else falls around them. And Lindor is key to that. Like,
sure.
He can't be average. He's not allowed to be average.
Well, here's the point. So here's the point, though. Now, last year, obviously, wasn't a great year. He hit 230. He hit 258 the year before. Shortened season. Let's throw it out. And then 284 the year before that. But that was a monster year. 32 homers, 75 RBIs. You know, you need that type of year. What you're hoping is that 2020 and 2021 aren't the new norms for him. Now, great fielding shortstop, probably a good guy in the locker room. It seems other than the rats and raccoons thing, seems like a guy who's, you know, needed to not basically do the thumbs down thing. But I think a guy like Buck's going to fix all of that, you know, and you know, guys like Machado, who I think is an asshole, loved Buck, you know, all of that stuff. So I think that's where it's going. But you know what you got to hope for as a Met fan, that the new norm is not what you've seen the last 2 years out of him. It's, you know, he's going to revert back to 2019. And then I think that's a huge thing where if you can bat him anywhere from 3 to 5, that gives you what you need to do. So that's the key guy. As much as we want to do anything different, he's the key.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I want that reliever. I want the lefty reliever. And I want another starter, but I can't see them getting another starter. I can't see where they're going to get it from. So,
yeah, I mean, listen, they'd have to pay dearly. And, you know, do they have enough clout to make all of that happen? And I think you can get by with what they have as starters. I mean, you need something out of Peterson. You need a couple of those guys to pitch. I know Stroman's a loss, Patrick. I agree with you. I just don't like Stroman. I think the guy's just a bad guy. I don't know him personally, but I just think Marcus Stroman's a bad guy and doesn't belong in New York City playing baseball. But, you know, Conforto, would you have signed Conforto for another round? I wouldn't have, you know, because of the money he's going to want. I thought it was just he hadn't lived up to that hype.
I think Conforto made a huge mistake not taking a qualifying offer.
I agree.
That with Conforto – at his age, with what he's done in the last couple of years, what he had to do was take the qualifying offer, suffer with the $19.7 million that he was going to make for the year, right?
Yeah.
And then throw up a 280, 30, 90, you know, and good defense, and then go out and look for your four-year, you know, $130 million deal, whatever, you know. Like, I mean, I think he made a mistake. I think he's going to end up on the Marlins for like $15 million.
Yeah.
That's what I think is going
to
happen.
And I think, you know, what he needed to do is just what you said. And I think the Mets, just to keep the homegrown guy there who they all liked, and is a pretty good outfielder, they would have probably overpaid a little bit just to keep him around. But you had to do exactly what you said. Take the one-year deal and go out there and kill it. Go out there and play your ass off, kill it, and then you would have got that three-year deal. For, you know, again, would you've gotten $30 million? No, he's not getting $30 million around the league. Nobody's giving him that money. I don't care who Boris is, you know, if it's Boris is his agent. Nobody coming out of this, lockout is going to give him that kind of money. He's going to want it with a one-year deal for just what you said, just to kind of a show-me year, and then see where he gets
exactly.
to.
And he should have done it here.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, and I think, I mean, obviously the Mets gave him the qualifying offer. So it was like, okay, dude, you're all set in right field. You're all good. Show me.
Yeah.
You know, it was easy, and he didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's because his agent is pissing in his ear, telling him, you're worth
it. Of course.
And here he is, you know. I mean, I don't think, I mean, look, I look at the rumor mills the second that baseball ends, when the last World Series game ends, I'm looking at the rumor mill every freaking day until opening day. And I got to tell you, Conforto's name has come up once.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Again, it's, you know, you can just go back, and if you watched him play the last few years, he had some streaks where he was good, but it was never in the length of time you needed to establish himself to get that kind of level of offer from anybody. And he was never going to be anybody's big piece of the puzzle right now.
Right. I mean consistency is what Conforto has lacked.
Correct.
And consistency is what gets you
paid
multi-year deals at multi-millions of dollars.
100%.
We'll see what happens with him. But,
yeah, it's good. Listen, it's going to be interesting.
You know what?
Good.
I mean, typical Mets lore will be that wherever Conforto signs, he's going to hit 310, he's going to hit 45 home runs, 140 RBIs, and be the MVP.
You're lucky to sign with the Braves and come back to haunt you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Philly, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Someplace where, you know, he'll get that big hit in September off the ground and beat you to take the pennant. Yeah. That's the way it works. Oh, but it's going to be fun. You know, the lockouts here, and I expect the Mets, they're not done. I think they're going to have a couple more things, a couple of big moves. If he's going to go all in, he's going to go all in right now. This is the time to do it. And spend the money and use it. That's it.
I'm looking forward to see what the Yanks do when the lockout ends, because there's definitely some moves that got to be made.
Sure.
They were really quiet beforehand. And you know what? The Yankees have never been known for – you know, being, passive. So.
Yeah, the problem is, though, Paul, they've backed themselves into a corner. You know, you're going to have to pay Judge at some point, right? So you're going to have that big contract. You're already stuck with Stanton's big contract, right? So you're stuck there. You got Cole's big contract. I didn't want one of the shortstops for that kind of money. If I could have got one of the shortstops for 2 or 3 years, I'd have given him $60 million a year for 3 years. You know, I just didn't want to pay for 10 because there's supposed to be two kids in the minors that's going to be the future shortstop, and you can't afford it. So the problem is, you know, unless they're going to add a fifth, you know, $30-something million contract, you know, at some point, where do you go? I do want them to re-sign Rizzo. I would love Freddie Freeman. I still don't believe that's going to happen. But I bring back Rizzo, you know, and then try to, for the first time in a long time, shore up the bullpen. The bullpen was a big part of the reason why they were bad last year. The pitching staff's not bad. I can live with the pitching staff.
I mean, do you think there's any trade market for Voit?
You're going to get next. You got to trade Voit. I mean, I think you'll get something. I don't think you're going to get much. Voit's a good player. He's just injury prone, and I don't like him at first base. I think you're going to move LeMayu to first base. You're going to wind up, you know, playing Torres at second. You're going to get yourself a fill-in shortstop, and then probably Urcella's going to play third. And we're stuck with Sanchez. I can't believe they re-signed him, but I'm stuck with Gary Sanchez behind the plate next year. You're going to have Gallo, Judge, and Stanton with maybe – I'm hoping Hicks is gone. I would love to see him get a center fielder and then rotate the DH with those three guys.
Yeah, I've been hearing rumors about Didi or maybe even Simmons.
I love bringing back Didi for a year or two. I do. I think Didi Gregorius did a great job in New York.
Yeah.
I thought he did it was great, and I think he'd be a good guy. You know, hits well enough and is a good shortstop. So I would do a 2-year deal for Didi right now, and then see where you break from there. But I didn't want to give another 10-year deal to Correa or one of those guys. Just couldn't see it happening.
I agree. I think it would have been penny-wise, pound foolish to do that.
Absolutely. And so it's going to be fun. We'll see what the lockout brings. And, you know, hopefully you'll come back. We'll talk a bit more baseball after the lockout before the season starts. And, you know, not much football we could talk about. I'm going to get abused by Jeff in a few minutes because we're going to talk a little Giants. And, Very disappointing. Paul, real quick, would you bring – who would you and who would you not bring back next year for the Giants? Scott? I'm bringing back Judge. I'm bringing back – I can't fire another coach after 2 years. I got to bring back Judge.
I don't mind Judge. I don't think it's his fault.
I agree. I think he's got bad players.
I think our problem is personnel.
I agree.
Our problem is personnel. You know, I mean, I still think we have a quarterback. Shut up, Jeff. I still think we have a quarterback.
I agree with you.
You know, other than that, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I can't figure it out anymore. I got lost.
Yeah, again, I just can't fire another. I mean, at some point, we got to. If you think the guy's the guy,
no choice but to fire your fucking coach.
There we go.
You need to stop, okay?
There we go.
You're expecting mm-hmm. a new general manager to come in and take the coach that was there. Let me rewind just a few short years ago.
Here we go.
I had Tommy. Like Tommy with his little long leg. You know, the Jets hired.
Hold on. Let me go get another drink. Hold on.
What are you saying about the Jets hiring Idzig and keeping Rex? Same shit, bro. Same exact shit.
No, I disagree. Rex had more years in at that point. So I'm not buying into that. But again, 2 years ago, you thought Judge, if Mara thought Judge was the guy for whatever reason, I think you got to give him an opportunity to fix this. I do.
I thought fucking Gettleman was the guy.
All right, Gettleman had 4 years.
Every single guy that he drafted is made of fucking glass. Jones has been hurt every year he's on the team. Barkley, please. Nigga, please, with fucking Saquon Barkley. Stop it.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom, I think you need a different co-host when you do football.
Yeah, I almost want. Yeah.
I'll tell you exactly what you need. What you need is somebody that's going to help you out, and I'm helping you out. And I'm first is getting rid of fucking Gettleman.
Gettleman's gone. It's no doubt. Gettleman's gone. It's no doubt.
I don't know. You want to talk about the waiver wire? I don't know what the fuck you guys are reading, but everything I read is questioning about Daniel Jones and if he even belongs on that team. Daniel Jones is going to be history.
I disagree wholeheartedly on Daniel Jones. I don't care what anybody else says. I look at Daniel Jones and I see a guy who's an adequate, better than adequate NFL quarterback who just needs an offensive line in front of him and a bunch of receivers who don't get hurt every week. And again, this is what I say to him every time. Okay, great. You want to get rid of Daniel Jones? Who are you replacing him with? Tell me who you're replacing. Am I going to get Mike Glennon? Am I going to get Colt McCoy? Then I'll keep him. The draft has nobody in now. If you tell me, hey, we're going to trade 2 first round picks and we're going to come back with Russell Wilson, I'm not the biggest Russell Wilson fan, but the guy is a veteran, got a few years left on him, and he's got a track record. Okay, I'll go for that.
What are you going to do with Russell Wilson?
I don't want Russell Wilson. I'm just saying this.
I'm asking you, what are you going to do with Russell Wilson? You still haven't done nothing to upgrade the line. You have wide receivers that just whatever.
All right, I got it. But I'm saying, see, I would not trade for Russell Wilson. Corey Davis had a great year. Corey Davis had a great year. I forgot. He played, what, 4 games?
Galladay.
Okay, but Corey Davis had 4, what did he play, 4 games?
Not Corey Davis.
But here's the thing, Paul. Here's what I say to him all the time. I understand the fact that Galladay sucked this year, didn't have a great year, but you're Dave Gettleman. You need a wide receiver. The best guy on the market is Galladay, and he signs him. I mean, what do you want to do? You didn't sign the third best receiver like the Jets did in Corey Davis, and he did shit. You signed the best receiver available.
I know. So what you did was spend more money on a guy that was injured for half the season last year.
Okay.
Has been injured for half the season this year.
It
does not matter what the Jets do because I told you 3 years ago.
This is his out. Yeah.
They suck.
This is his out every week. The Jets already suck.
I told you that they sucked 3 years ago.
Oh, my God.
This is a man that's given up.
Yeah, exactly. But so yeah, that better do to pick on my our team.
I'm not giving up. I'm being completely honest with you.
Oh, my God.
They suck. You could go back on every one of these shows and hear Tommy say, well, Gettleman knows what he's doing.
I did. I still think he thought there was...
He hasn't done anything.
But again, I'm just saying, he went out and signed the best players.
In the NFL in the last 10 years are the New York Giants and the New York Jets.
I get it.
In the last 10 years, the Jets and the Giants, two worst teams in the NFL.
I'm not disagreeing.
You're going to say about that?
I'm saying this: we're going to get a new GM. I would keep the coach and the quarterback.
New GM, you're going to keep the coach, the quarterback, and all the players.
No.
You know what's going to happen? Now you're going 11 years.
I didn't say I was keeping all the players. I'm just saying I think you got to keep the coach, and I think you got to keep the quarterback, unless you got to come up with somebody better. There's nobody in the draft that's going to make a big turnaround on this team.
It doesn't matter. You do get somebody a 1 year stopgap.
Who? I don't want a 1 year stopgap. I don't want that.
It doesn't matter. You want to keep the same guy? The guy
yes.
made a fucking glass.
Oh, my God. Here we go. So how many games did Zach Wilson play this year? The guy looked what he played, six games?
Dude, I'll tell you right now. Zach Wilson is not the answer to that team.
Okay.
During the quarterback of that team. The guy didn't even play a full fucking season. I'm ready to get rid of him already. Okay? I'm not holding on to him because there's nobody else. Next. You can throw a fucking party. Next.
I'll keep Daniel Jones until they can come up with somebody better. That's all I could say. Okay.
The guy looks just as confused as Eli.
No. Stop.
Nobody looks as confused as Eli. But this guy looks fucking bad.
Two rings.
Two fucking rings. Two lucky plays.
Here we go. You come on, Paul. This is what I deal with every Thursday night. This is every and all day long.
The whole giant issue is very simple. There's one problem. It's been going on for years. We got to get that fucking renting team.
Yes, I agree.
Out of our fucking stadium.
Yes, the black cloud.
Have this Jets stink.
Yes.
It gets through the wall.
Yes, I agree.
That's why shit goes bad.
I agree with you. I agree.
They got to go play on Long Island. So.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
The big black cloud.
That's what it is.
Paulie, listen. Thanks for coming on, bro. I appreciate it. I'm going to let you.
All right.
I will see hopefully I'll see you Tuesday.
I'm going to see you Tuesday, for sure.
I hope so. Yep, absolutely. I wish... Julia and everybody, the boys, Merry Christmas for us, and enjoy the sticks, man. Enjoy the sticks.
Hey, I'm chilling. I'm going to throw another log on the fire right now.
Good for you, man. Enjoy yourself, pal. Thanks for coming. I appreciate
the
help.
Are you in the house for the night?
Yeah. We're up here until Monday.
Stay safe, man. Don't go outside.
Yeah,
we'll have no fox chase you.
When you go outside at night, there's like no light in the future. I mean, it's just black out there.
I am 1,800 feet above sea level.
Dude, he could read.
Dude, I'm in the fucking mountain. I see outside
because of the stars that he sees out there, man.
If I see a light outside, it's a deer's eyes.
Oh, man.
That's it. I'm telling you, I'm in the sticks, yo. I mean, and it's cool. I like it.
I don't blame shit. Well, enjoy it, man. Merry Christmas, brother. I love you guys.
All right. I'll see you guys soon.
You got it, pal. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, man. That's Paul Gill. Joined us. Have a little fun with Paul. That was a good hour. Had some fun. So let's get to the Giants a little bit, Jeff. How's that? Let's give you some fun. There he goes. I know he's getting all revved up. He's at Hard Rock and Sports, Jeff and Tom. We're creeping up on 9 o'clock here on the East Coast, having some fun with Christmas. Merry Christmas to you all, and thank you for checking in with us. Next week we'll do our year-end show, and we'll have a lot more fun before we got a lot of football. I want to run through a couple of things, but let's talk about the Giants a little bit, Jeff. So I know we joke about it and all of that, but it is scary right now. I mean, I don't know as a Giant fan which way really is the proper way to go. I know it's easy to clean house and start from scratch, but there's no guarantee the next guy's going to do any better, and that's the scary part.
It's not a matter of having to clean house, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's like this, okay? If every day your boss turns around and says, mm-hmm. we're having hamburgers for lunch,
mm-hmm.
next day, hamburgers for lunch. You've had hamburgers for lunch every day for the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now all of a sudden the new guy comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Says, we're getting pizza today. Holy shit, we're getting pizza. This is great. is going to be the best pizza I've ever had because it's the first time in 3 years that you haven't pizza lunch.
Right.
Same thing with the quarterback. You know, the coach, the general manager,
mm-hmm.
fired them because they have a philosophy. They have a common ground. Now you have to worry if they do not make the change,
mm-hmm.
that means that the general manager's coming in. He's going to be like a figurehead. All right, this guy's here. I gotta work with him. He's on a one-year fucking flyer.
Right.
Okay, so if nothing happens after a year, you're going to delay the inevitable going anyway. Okay? This team hasn't won in 3 years. If you don't do anything about the quarterback situation, you're dealing with the same quarterback for the last 3 years. Same thing is going to happen. If you don't do anything about the offensive line, it does not matter who the quarterback is. You ain't doing anything anyway.
But let me ask you a question, Joe Jeff. I got it, but here's the thing, though. What if Joe Judge and Daniel Jones, or either one, let's not make it both, but let's say either one, is the right guy and we're just not given the opportunity to get there? I mean, I haven't seen anything yet from Joe Judge where I'd say he's made a ton of bad mistakes, or I've seen enough good from Daniel Jones. Now, yeah, I question the injuries and all of that, but at what point do we say, hey, we're rushing, we talked about not having enough patience to say, give the guy a chance. I mean, Eli took 4 years before he turned into the quarterback he became. So I'm saying if we'd have bailed on Eli 2 years in, we would never have seen the quarterback that he became. So what I'm saying is, at what point do you have to have some patience and say, let me stick with this guy?
Here's the difference.
Go ahead.
Okay. One, Eli Archie Manning.
Okay.
Two, Peyton Manning.
Okay.
He had a quarterback pedigree. Three, he had another brother who was a quarterback, I believe.
Cooper was a wide receiver, I think.
Wide receiver? I thought he was a quarterback. Actually, no. There was another. He never played.
Oh, okay.
Another quarterback.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. I didn't know. If he does, I didn't know that. Okay.
Quarterbacking is within their family.
I would say it's a family business.
Yeah. Okay. That's one thing.
Okay.
Second, okay. By the time he hit his fourth year.
Right.
Okay. You're saying is when he won his first Super Bowl?
That's when he won the first Super Bowl. Up until that year, all you heard was that he was a turnover machine. He was skittish and was never going to be a great player. And then at that playoff year, he turned it around and went and won the Super Bowl. So, and then it was a whole different ball game, but he played with an established offensive line that was very good. He had a good receiving core with Plaxico and Amani Toomer and those guys. And it just took him a chance to get to that point. I'm just saying is if after year two, they had bailed on him, same thing. Parcells wasn't great his first year. They almost fired him. They kept him, and the next thing you know, he blossomed. I'm saying is at what point do you say we hired the guy or we drafted the guy because we believed in them, we got to give them a chance to learn on the job. I think Gettleman had 4 years. It didn't work. I'm all for getting rid of 4 years. You ain't put it together. I'm just saying this on those guys. Why can't we give them a little time to build into the job?
Because you already have him for 3 years. He hasn't played a full season. Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Season number four is coming up.
Mm-hmm. What's up, Lou? Lou, we're talking about your Giants, Lou. I know you're not happy. Did you get your free soda, Lou? Did you get your free soda Sunday?
He's coming up on his fourth year.
Yep.
The guy hasn't shown much major progress in 3 years. Now, maybe he cut back on the turnovers a little bit this year, but mm-hmm. he certainly hasn't increased his touchdowns.
No, but do you blame that? Do you think about it? His first year, he played really well, 20-something touchdowns. Under Pat Shurmur, then they get rid of Shurmur, they bring in Judge and Jason Garrett, and the whole offense takes a major turn the wrong way. Do we blame it on the play calling and the players on the field? He didn't have enough. I'm just saying is at what point do we give him a little credit for the first year, and then a little bit credit goes to other people the second and third year?
If he's in his third year and he had 20 touchdowns, the first year, and then the second year, say he dipped down to 15.
Yeah.
Okay. Now in the third year, now they shut him down due to no fault of his own.
Mm-hmm.
He's injured.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's say he was on pace for 24 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They figured at the rate he was going, he would have hit 24 touchdowns with 10 interceptions and 12 fumbles lost. Okay. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of quarterbacks. I read the NFL.com every week. They do the top 32 quarterbacks in the league.
Yep.
I am amazed at the number of fumbles that all of these quarterbacks have.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is absolutely fucking amazing.
Yeah, it is crazy, right? You don't realize how some of these guys are, yeah.
10, 11, 12 fumbles each.
Yeah, he's not alone in that category.
No, he's not alone in that category. But when you're making those fumbles mm-hmm. and it's giving up points to the other team, it doesn't look so good for you.
I agree.
A lot of his issues are. If he was looked like he was going in the trending in the right direction, mm-hmm. then I could say, all right, I hear what you say, but he wasn't. He wasn't. And you're talking about now taking a general manager
mm-hmm.
who now has to accept somebody else's coach,
right?
Who also has to accept somebody else's quarterback. This is like marrying a woman that has two kids, and there was three different fathers involved.
No, Jeff, I agree with you. I think the theory of it. No, I think the theory of what you're saying is correct, and I'm not disagreeing with it. Let me ask you this question. Let's say you bring in a GM and you say to him, hey, we want to hire you. You're going to be our guy, whether it's Lewis Riddick or one of these established guys. And he said, what do you think of our coach and quarterback? And they came in and said, hey, I like them. I think there's potential there. If I give them something to work with, I want to keep them. Does your mind change it at all? If the GM you're bringing in says, I want to keep one or both of those guys. And again, it could be such a situation to that extent. It could be, I don't like the fact that the Giants tell them, well, you know, this is who you're getting and call it a day. I think they do have to give the GM a little bit of a say to say, is this your guy? Could you make this your guy? And see what they say. But what do you think if that was the case?
You're asking them right off the bat. You know, what do you think? You think you could work with this? This is who we have. You think you could work with this guy? No, I understand all the times that you say, bring in
mm-hmm.
who's going to replace this one. I'd rather not have this. I'd rather not have a retread.